Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch joins me. We're going to talk about Enterprise DB, the commercial version of PostgreSQL that has all sorts of cool extra features. And we can also talk about how Postgres has really improved over the last 5 years. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch. Episode 224, recorded August 29th, 2012. PostgreSQL and Enterprise DB. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, coming to you each week, bringing you the big projects, the little projects, the projects you might not have heard of at all, projects you might be really familiar with but just want to know what's happening behind the scenes. Love to do this show. Love to do it as often as I can. I'm on almost every week. Occasionally, I have to take a side trip, and I have co-hosts that take over for me when that happens. But this week, I'm here. I'm in the big chair, and I am joined once again by one of my favorite co-hosts, Dan Lynch. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Hi, it's good to be here. It's nice to know I'm one of your favorite co-hosts as well. Thank you for that.
I was going to say,
I won't tell the others. Sorry, I won't tell the others. Don't worry.
All my favorite co-hosts. You're all my favorite. You're all my favorite children, really. No problem. How awful is that? That's just crazy. Anyway, so welcome back to the show. We have a really interesting, I've been looking forward to this show for a long time. We have really interesting guests coming up, and my notes slid too far, and I can't even read them. My notes. Here we go. So our guest today is, how do I pronounce this right, Ed Boyajian, something close to that. He is the head dude. He doesn't have his, it doesn't say what he is, but he's at Enterprise DB. I believe he is like the head dude. I think it's like the CEO or something like that. My notes don't say. That's really strange. Usually it has like what he does at Enterprise DB. But what Enterprise DB does is they provide commercial support and some additional proprietary software on top of my favorite database, Postgres. PostgreSQL, yes. Yes, we did a show 5 years ago back in, was it 2007? Yeah. 5 years ago, my very first show was talking with Josh Berkus, who was the community coordinator for Postgres. And we talked a little bit about what was going on then in the Postgres community and what Postgres was up to and how it differed from MySQL and the other databases you might be familiar with. But I tell you, in the last 5 years, Postgres has really come along a long way. So I wanted to bring somebody on to talk about what's happened lately, like speed up improvements, replication built in, common table elimination, modern standards being implemented, and all sorts of stuff. So I wanted to bring in somebody that really represents that. But I also wanted to talk about how a business can be built around an open source software. I mean, we love talking about business models here because, you know, people always say, I can't do open source software. I have to be a starving artist to do that. But no, we're actually going to bring on the leader of a company who is making good money and also turning that back into community support, because some of the people work on Postgres all day are working in Enterprise DB, and that actually improves the open core on that. So, Dan, any thoughts?
Yeah, I actually remember listening to that show 5 years ago with Josh, where you talked about Postgres, and I can't wait to hear what's happened in the next 5 years. And I think it's a great product, and I can't wait to hear more about it.
Very good. Well, without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Ed Boyajian, I hope I pronounced that right. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Randall. Good to be here.
Very good. Very good. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in our office in Bedford, Mass.
Bedford, Mass. Wow. So you're on the East Coast. So you're sort of halfway between me and Dan, I guess, in terms of geography. We always start off with a little bit of geography in each show. It's sort of a tradition now. So anyway, so I, in the opening of the show, I covered what I believe Postgres has been doing for the last few years, and also what I believe Enterprise DB is doing, sort of the high-level view of that. And what I want to do with you first is sort of cover the basics of what Postgres is, because some people in our audience have never even heard of Postgres. It's hard to imagine. And also particularly what's really happened in the last 5 years, because I did have a talk with Josh Berkus 5 years ago about Postgres. So I want to kind of cover that as sort of a baseline, and then let's talk about what Enterprise DB brings on top of that. Does that sound good?
That sounds great.
So let's go ahead. Why don't you describe Postgres?
Sure. So Postgres is, you know, you think about Postgres as a traditional relational database management system, and it's, you know, in in cut of the cloth of an Oracle style database, I think is the easiest way to think about it. And, you know, people get confused to some extent about Postgres because it's, you know, as an open source database, it's oftentimes compared to MySQL, and people, you know, that have followed open source software have got very comfortable with MySQL from a technology point of view. And I think given the popularity of MySQL, in some ways, that popularity overshadowed a lot of the, you know, Postgres technology and the Postgres brand. And so, you know, think of Postgres as essentially an open source version of an Oracle, which is the easiest way to, you know, the easiest way to compare it.
Now, how would it contrast with MySQL? And because I know that I think probably most of this audience is familiar with MySQL. Why is Postgres different? And I'm going to argue better, and you probably will too. In what sort of ways?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally speaking, you know, MySQL was built around a design thesis about, you know, support for web applications. And to that end, you know, there was the core architecture of MySQL is fundamentally different, you know, with, you know, kind of a front end and a storage engine as two separate parts. As you know, there's multiple storage engine vendors, but typically people have thought of MySQL as not having full ACID properties, although with some of the storage engines that changes. Think of Postgres, you know, to the extent that it was always built to, you know, kind of operate as a fully ACID compliant relational database with, you know, with some of the same attributes as technologies like Oracle.
Now, a lot of the things I'm really excited about in terms of Postgres is stuff that's been added over the last 5 years or so, and things like CTE and window functions, and particularly the replication. I know that's going to be more of our concerns. We're getting more into what Enterprise DB is about. Can you describe, for anybody who hasn't been paying attention to Postgres for 5 or 6 years, what they've been missing?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, obviously as a relational database technology, Postgres is deployed broadly. We have thousands of customers at EnterpriseDB, and we represent, you know, a small fraction of actual users for Postgres. And as deployments of Postgres have expanded, the demand for all the things that people come to expect from the relational database in terms of performance, reliability, scalability, security, and tooling, you know, have all been part of the project continuum with the community. Some of the things that have happened more in recent years have focused heavily on performance improvements. And so if you kind of look back at the releases, really from we're currently at the next release that comes out in September is 9.2, but from the 7.4 release, the 8.0 release, 8.3 and 8.4, generally speaking, there have been substantial performance improvements across all those releases. An example of that is HOT, which is heap only tuples, which improves the performance of update statements that don't modify index columns. That was released in the 8.3 release, I guess now about a little over three years ago. Better CPU scalability on multi-core servers. You know, this has long been an area where Postgres has improved. That's in particular with 9.2. I mean, that's obviously important as Postgres gets adopted in larger scale mission critical deployments. In both those examples, we played a big role in funding the development of that improvement in the community. We weren't the only ones who worked on that, but we played an important role in that. Built in, as you mentioned earlier, replication. You know, we've put it in the 9.0 release was the first version of asynchronous streaming replication. And then with the 9.1 release came synchronous streaming replication. And then, you know, generally, I mean, some things that might be considered smaller support for JSON and XML, you know, SQL features such as Windows functions, common table expressions, foreign tables, and per column collations to help people, you know, that are managing data that needs to be sorted according to different rules depending on which language is in use. And then overall, big manageability improvement, such as extensions and improvements in vacuum in 9.1 and 9.4. And then maybe some of the things that may seem less a little more esoteric, but I think from our point of view, from my point of view, very important to the overall trajectory of Postgres is work we've done here on installers to make, you know, to put in place one-click installers that make the guys who, you know, want to try the technology a little bit easier and faster to get up and running.
So if somebody looked at Postgres, say, 6 years ago and did a, you know, you can always make benchmark lie in both directions. But if somebody looked at Postgres 6 years ago and just had a simple insert and update test and they did an insert and update test with Postgres, they would have probably seen that MySQL was probably a lot faster, particularly if they didn't use NODB tables. But so are you saying that it's closer in speed for doing the same sorts of operations now, or even better?
Yeah. I am, and I, you know, I don't. We haven't done specific performance benchmarks on that use case, and we frankly don't get asked very often about performance vis-a-vis MySQL at this point. But I think it's safe to say that the performance attributes of Postgres now match, you know, certainly match MySQL in many regards. You know, and again, that if you think about the competitive, you know, the competitive framework, it's really looking at, you know, what are the kind of heavier weight relational database workloads requiring? And so I think in that regard, you know, again, the performance improvements have been pretty substantial. And that's reflected, frankly, in the, you know, the adoption that we've seen in our customer base who have gone from, you know, where 4 years ago when I came, we started, you know, we were working with mid-tier companies, generally speaking, in non-mission critical workloads. I think that, you know, those performance enhancements have allowed us to graduate to the, you know, to the bigger companies, Fortune 1000 companies, global 1000 companies that are using Postgres now in, you know, increasingly mission critical oriented workloads.
And the other disqualifying thing that people really just passed over Postgres for in the last 5 years or so was the lack of replication. We had the replication for external packages like Sloany and stuff, but it wasn't built in, although a sort of mediocre version of it is built into MySQL. Can you describe I think you got to it a little bit when you're talking about the log shipping stuff, but let's talk some more about how the replication features are actually maturing now.
Yeah, I mean, within the core of Postgres, you know, as I mentioned, the 9.0 release introduced streaming replication. That was asynchronous streaming, and then I think in 9.1 that came out as streaming replication, which is a really important core enhancement to the community version of Postgres, you know, to the extent that but it is master-slave replication, so it enhances read performance, you know, read performance of the database. I think, you know, as you may be aware, we just announced a beta release of our enhancement to that. We refer to it as XDB replication. We've added the feature of multi-master replication to that. So now we've gone one step further, and this is even, you know, a little beyond where the community is right now, to add you know, add the ability to have multiple masters. You know, so as we deal with a new style of demand where, you know, we've got multiple data centers coming online. And, you know, our customers in particular want to have multiple masters across data centers. You know, we're able to deliver that capability. Granted, we're in beta right now, but we should be releasing that before the end of the year in GA.
Now, you don't get anything for free, so that multi-master stuff is going to be costing you the round-trip time to confirm that everybody, other master, is all happy, right?
That's right. But I think, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, at this point, though, we're kind of dealing with the speed of light, so... you know, we see performance, you know, performance that, you know, would be appropriate and expected for a multi-master solution.
Okay, so this, we've been talking mostly about the core open source version of Postgres. So where does enterprise start there, and what are they bringing to the table as well? What are you bringing to the table, I should say?
Yeah, I mean, I think to a large extent, what, you know, what we've been doing is taking the project, the open source technology, and bringing that to customers in a commercial, you know, commercial package. And what that means is, you know, in addition to wrapping around that enterprise class support that every company looks for from a software vendor, that's, you know, that may or may not be easy to get through a pure community project, you know, we've brought that kind of support package around community Postgres. We've gone beyond that to the extent that we've brought additional technologies and features that are enhancements to Postgres. And I think, you know, on this show, I'm sure you guys talk about different open source models. We, you know, probably most closely aligned to the open core model, where we've taken and maintained tight synchronization with Postgres core, but add extensions to that to make, you know, the product, add features and capabilities to the product that enterprise customers are looking for that may not be ready in the community or on the community roadmap per se, but our interests and needs of enterprise customers. And so we have a couple of versions of our product. We have one that's called Postgres. Our flavor of Postgres we call Postgres Plus. And in our base model that we have Postgres Plus Solution Pack and then Postgres Plus Advanced Server. And we add a variety of different different things into those packages. For example, in our Postgres Plus solution pack, we add DXDB replication server, which we've talked about. We add some management and monitoring tools. We refer to as Postgres Enterprise Manager. That builds on the pgAdmin functionality, which is excellent functionality in the community version, but adds more GUI interface and a little easier interface and some additional functions. We offer a SQL profiler, a package called PL Secure, and an update monitor, so you're continuously notified of update to the various packages you might have installed. And then when we go to our kind of higher order product, Advanced Server, we add a new dimension of capabilities that center largely on Oracle compatibility, which was technology that was really at the heart of where the company was founded on, was to provide an enterprise class alternative to Oracle while making it easy for Oracle customers to migrate off. And so we, in our Advanced Server product, add those capabilities with Advanced Server, particularly around Oracle compatibility, where we basically handle, the various, stored procedures and stored functions and work with those inside of Postgres.
Hmm. So one of the first things actually was brought up to me when we announced that you were going to be a guest was, is this an open core business? This was the first question I got from someone, which can be a controversial model. So from what you're describing, it sounds like you don't mind being described as open core. Is that fair to say?
I'd be interested to get the current definition of open core. But from my point of view, I think it's an accurate representation. To the extent that we add some extensions, many of them are open source, some are proprietary, to the distribution that we give to our customers. But we continuously synchronize with the community core. So, to the extent that we certainly have seen around the Postgres community, because of the nature of the license, which is technically the Postgres license, but it's virtually the same as the BSD license. A lot of companies have taken that code base and, built derivatives and kind of forked and left the community behind. And, for our purposes, we felt it very important to maintain tight synchronization with the community. And so we built in the engineering model around our product that allows us to do that. So, with the next release of Postgres community version of 9.2, which comes out, I believe, mid-September, a few weeks away, we'll release our Postgres Plus versions all within two to 3 weeks of that time frame.
Cool. And you mentioned you've already mentioned Oracle quite a bit. Now, we can't talk about enterprise databases without kind of the elephant in the room, which is Oracle. So you've talked a lot about migrations and so on. Can you give us a little bit more information about how someone could migrate from, say, an Oracle solution right now to Enterprise DB? And do you have any case studies or anything you can highlight for us?
Yeah, we have some good examples online of companies that have gone through a process. But, think about it this way. I think as you probably know, what's made the database business so big is I think a couple of important things. One, the applications are, have become much more intertwined with the database through the use of stored procedures and stored triggers and functions. And inherent in that, has enabled the big vendors to continue to raise prices and kind of avoid a dimension of competition. The second thing is data is precious to most companies. So any ideas of change, requires higher levels of planning, thinking, and executive buy-off. I think what we've done with Postgres Plus Advanced Server and the Oracle compatibility functions is said, look, we want to create essentially an ability for you to run your applications that were written for Oracle to run with minimal or no change to run on a Postgres database, so that those same, those technologies that are deeply embedded with the app, the stored procedures and whatnot, will run without having to rewrite those in a Postgres database. And so that's been the direction that we've pursued. It represents an important part of our business, but not all of our business, because we still serve a variety of customers who just use community version of Postgres or who aren't necessarily migrating from Oracle. I'd say a little over half of our business comes from companies who have addressed some kind of Oracle migration need.
Oh, cool. And we talked a little bit about how different Postgres is to MySQL, but has the acquisition of MySQL by Oracle made any difference to the business landscape when it comes to enterprise databases, do you think?
You know, interestingly, I think it has, Dan. I mean, you know, frankly, I came to EnterpriseDB in 2008 now. And at the time, I had spent 7 years at Red Hat, a little under 7 years at Red Hat. And interestingly, there, our customers were asking us, how are you going to help me deal with my database problems? How are you going to help me deal with Oracle? And prior to my leaving Red Hat, we saw MySQL get purchased by Sun for $1 billion. And I think at that time, everybody declared, you know, the winner in the open source database world is MySQL. And, you know, based on my experience with customers, and granted, I was probably dealing with, the global 1000 or global 2000 at that time, I didn't believe for a minute that MySQL was actually attacking the workloads that our Red Hat customers were asking us about. And I don't believe that's true today. And I think, you know, MySQL certainly continues to play an important role in the ecosystem and from a brand perspective, accomplished very important things. But I think in terms of real impact on, you know, the traditional enterprise class workloads that continue to be the primary domain of Oracle, IBM, Microsoft, and to a certain extent, Sybase as well, you know, I don't think MySQL ever really touched those workloads. So it's a roundabout way to get to the answer to your question. But, you know, as you think about Oracle's ultimate acquisition of MySQL, I think what it did is it kind of took a little bit of that brand overhang, that open source database brand overhang off of Postgres. And I think it's helped immensely. I think, you know, those companies who were relying on MySQL for certain classes of workloads, I don't think ever necessarily considered them for the higher order workloads. But with the acquisition by Oracle of Sun and ownership of MySQL, I think that, you know, the idea for those companies that they would be married to Oracle, you know, arguably, you know, a situation they want to try to provide some wedge against with open source has given us a greater opportunity to show off Postgres for what it is. Now, obviously, at EnterpriseDB, because we also happen to have some important IP around Oracle compatibility, you know, that facilitates some conversations there. But I do believe that acquisition resulted in an improvement in Postgres position, not because the technology in Postgres got any better as a result, just because some of that image and brand overhang as it relates to open source database, you know, kind of got relieved to a certain extent. Postgres has been an awesome database for a long time. But as you guys said at the beginning, it's probably a technology that's been, you know, relatively, you know, less well known or less well understood. And I think part of it's been because of the MySQL overhang, which seems to be, you know, has changed.
That's interesting to hear, because, I mean, there's a lot of, I can't speak for Oracle, obviously, but I'd imagine their plan is to get people who are on MySQL to migrate to their Oracle products and stuff. And I'd be interested to know how many people choose to migrate to, say, Postgres instead of staying on MySQL or going, you know, to an Oracle solution, which they're obviously going to try and push as their business model. So we have a question from the IRC channel, which I actually need to just scroll up slightly to see. We have a question from Goodwill, who says, yeah, this is a technical question. He was asking about the reforce synchronization, which you mentioned before. He wants to know if you can define it a little better, as in what gets synchronized and what doesn't and why, if that makes any sense.
Who asked the question again?
Goodwill. It says Goodwill, G-O-O-D-W-I-L-L.
Goodwill, I would love to answer that question if I could. Get deep enough technically to do it for you properly. If possible, if the questions get technical, I'd rather we can take some, you know, we can kind of create a separate, I'm not sure if we got some of our guys on the IM, we may have some enterprise DB guys who are far better equipped than I am to answer, you know, answer questions that go a little deeper technically. So, I'm not sure if, I'll do a shout out to the enterprise DB guys. If you're on the IM, if there's a way to answer that question for Goodwill, that would be great.
Bruce is there, okay. So he's already answering parts of it.
Oh. Thank you, Bruce.
There you go. So very quickly, I mean, we've talked a little bit about the relationship between Enterprise DB and the Postgres community, but I'm just curious to know how close that relationship is, and do you employ people from the Postgres community and contribute back and all that kind of good stuff?
Yeah, I think I would characterize it as a very a very strong and healthy relationship. You know, the Postgres community, as you know, and I think this is a great attribute of the community, is an independent open source community. And I think, you know, we can talk about this with regard to MySQL, but, you know, in the end, MySQL was you know, did great work, but that community and the company were a single brand. And, you know, similar to the Linux community and its relationship to Red Hat, I think we enjoy a similar kind of interplay with the Postgres community, albeit I would say, you know, a bit closer. A lot of the work that we do in core engineering, we do with an eye towards contributing back to the community. Certainly not all of it, but we pay a lot of attention to where we can use some of our resources and investments to add capabilities to Postgres. That's good for the community. It's good for our customers, but it's good for the segment in general. We do have a variety of really talented engineers on our staff who are important contributors to the Postgres community as well. As you may know, the Postgres community is guided by a core team that consists of seven folks. Bruce, who's on your IM, is one of those core team members. Dave Page, who's another employee at Enterprise DB, is also one of those core team members. And then around the core team, there are 20 to 30 major contributors of the project, and then a subgroup of that are committers to the source code in Postgres community, and some of those guys work for us as well. So we have really, in addition to playing a role in the community, which we endorse and encourage and value for our guys to be doing that, you know, they play a role at Enterprise DB in our engineering organizations, in our support organizations. They even sometimes play a role in the selling organization. but I think, you know, in that context, you know, it's important from my point of view. I came from Red Hat. I think, you know, Red Hat was a standard bearer in terms of how we approached open source technologies and how we approached working with communities. And I think we've built on that, you know, based on the experience. I mean, we do have a lot of ex-Red Hat guys here too. So I like to think of the relationship as valuable and close. And, you know, having said that, there's an obvious, you know, the community is quite independent. And I think that's really good for users, really good for customers. I think we play an important role in that ecosystem, but we're just a player in that ecosystem.
One of the things I found interesting the most about the Postgres community is there's really no, dictator for life. It's really a community-driven set of software. And I'm wondering how much of your team is involved in those roadmap type decisions, and has there ever been any interesting conflicts that you might want to talk about?
We probably have six or seven of the guys on the team here who play a part in helping define that roadmap and helping contribute code to that roadmap. To date, there haven't been a lot of conflicts. I think, to the extent we can, I mean, our conflicts are probably more internal to Enterprise DB, to the extent that, you know, we've got customers who are asking for things, capabilities, features that may not be part of the community version of Postgres that, you know, on the community roadmap, we may not be able to add a contribution fast enough to meet a customer need. So we have to make a decision, do we build something for a customer and get that out in an Enterprise DB patch or update? With some eye of how we handle that in the future at the Postgres community. And I think, you know, those battles are mostly internal. I don't think they necessarily radiate out to the community. I think in terms of how we're guided by community roadmap is very, very well informed by the members of Enterprise DB staff who work closest with the community. You know, that plays a big role in how we think about what we choose to prioritize. And I think on the other side, we do a lot to try to contribute back insight about, because we are a converge point for customer need and customer demand. I mean, we've got over 1,400 customers now, and that, you know, creates a natural funnel for things that, you know, demand for features, you know, like any software business would experience. And so, you know, we try to do our best to bring those thoughts and those requirements and requests back to the community in a productive and constructive way. As much as possible. So I'm sure the guys on the chat will chime in on comment about the nature of that.
We may have to publish the chat logs as part of the show notes. There's been some really good stuff there. Bruce has been really helping out with a couple of things and really doing a good job there. So I'm curious then, you say a lot of your customers are coming. Oh, let me address the point you just did first before I get into the next question there. So one of the things I see sometimes open source communities fail at is because the people who are making the most changes are their own customers only. They don't have a sense of having to market this to anybody outside their own group. And so you lose that kind of customer connectivity where people doing real world things with it that didn't just grow up with you and your communities were building it. There's no way you have this priority. Well, you know, if this project only had these features, we could use it for a whole area that you none of you guys that are building the software are aware of. So it sounds like that's really helped out Postgres in general and not just you as a company.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think we're the only ones who contribute to that. I mean, there's some excellent companies that are, that provide support and services around Postgres, you know, around the world, who are doing just the same thing that we're doing. And I think, you know, they're as engaged with customers as we are. I mean, we've certainly taken a product orientation to the way we approach customers. So we get a certain, you know, certain bias in the customers we talk to. But yeah, I think we do play an important role there. And I think that's a really helpful part. And commercial support for open source projects is a healthy evolution for any open source project. And so, you know, when I came to this in 2008, and I think, you know, Enterprise DB to some extent before that, we made a very clear declaration that we were going to be the, you know, enterprise Postgres product company. And I think the ecosystem of, you know, other players, I think has contributed similarly, but customers are voting. And you know, because of that, you're right. We can add, you know, a dimension of value on, you know, what people are looking for. I think more efficiently than, you know, than the system without companies like us and others helping that.
And okay, now back to my other question, which was I was starting to talk about you. So you talked about migration from Oracle over to Postgres. What about other migration paths? I mean, I'm sitting in a room that's for a place that's using MySQL like it's the only thing out there because of the multi-master requirements, things like that. What do you have migration support for things like MySQL? And actually, in the chat room, they also ask about MSSQL.
We do. We don't have the same kind of compatibility tools for other databases like we do for Oracle, but we certainly offer migration paths for, you know, for other technologies. I mean, this is not uncommon for other, you know, all the database companies have some kind of migration methodology that they help, you know, they help migrate a database into a new database technology. And we do the same. Generally speaking, we have, interestingly, and I think it's because most MySQL users spec'd MySQL because it didn't require the kind of, you know, the workhorse nature of a Postgres. So we've done our fair share of MySQL migrations, but we don't see an extraordinary amount of that. You know, a lot of times what we do certainly see SQL Server. We certainly, you know, done work with DB2 customers, with Sybase customers. So, you know, we have a pretty interesting cross-section of companies. Generally though, you know, we're dealing with a mix. It's not just migrations. We deal with a lot of companies now who are developing new applications written to run on Postgres. I think that's a particularly interesting and exciting dimension of the business. I think as cloud technologies, you know, take more hold, I think people are thinking about how they write their apps in a new way. And you know, we're getting, I think, additional nods for Postgres from that perspective. I mean, traditionally, you know, I think one of the things that we need to continue to do in the Postgres world is support developers. You know, continue to support developers in better ways. And but you know, to kind of come back to your core question, that migration from other databases, we do that. And you know, interestingly, it hasn't been as strongly oriented towards MySQL because I just don't think those users need or spec the need for, you know, the kind of capabilities we have.
Well, I tell you, once you've played a lot with Postgres, then go back and try to do the same things in MySQL. It's really sort of annoying. I'm just saying that as a developer. So I'm always happy when more people are moving to Postgres from MySQL, or at least starting with Postgres these days. You mentioned cloud there for a moment. Let's talk about that. Do you have support for, scalable instances and say maybe EC2 or something?
We do, yeah. We launched at the beginning of the year the first version of Postgres Plus Cloud Database, which is a pretty sophisticated, think about it as a sophisticated cluster manager that runs on Amazon. It also runs now on OpenStack via HP Cloud Services, also on CloudStack. We're about to launch on CloudStack. So, you know, think about what we're doing there is enabling the deployment of Postgres in a cloud or virtual infrastructure where you can create a multi-node cluster within 5 minutes. You know, a task that, you know, in a physical environment, you know, generally would take days to set up the same thing. And then around that, we've built in all the kinds of automated DBA functions that people need in cloud-like deployments, automated scaling, automated failover, automated backup, all according to a set of parameters that the user can define, and then, you know, not have to intervene every time additional resources are needed with the database. And I think, you know, those are, you know, interestingly, I think, you know, we find ourselves in a, in, you know, almost in general terms, we're not, you know, we don't, we're not leading in the technology path across the board. In this area, I think we've taken a pretty strong leadership position with the capabilities around Postgres. And what's worth noting is within that deployment of Postgres Plus Cloud Database, you can run the community version of Postgres, or you can run our Postgres Plus Advanced Server. So it runs that database in exactly its same state as you would run it in your data center, which makes the portability of applications kind of an interesting option for a lot of companies. And we don't see a lot of database companies quite where we are yet. I'm sure they're coming, though.
Yes, and I have to channel Simon Phipps for a minute about that, since you happen to bring up that you could run either the community edition or the your version of it. Is it possible for me to start with Postgres Plus and roll back to the community edition if I no longer find myself using the bonus features?
Yeah, it is. It is possible. You can go from one to the other. It would require stop and start of the database. That's you know, it's not a perfectly seamless migration. But you can the app doesn't change. You can run. You just have to stop the database and start the new one.
Okay, very cool. Because I know Simon would be mad at me if I didn't ask about that, because that's one of his biggest beefs about Open Core, is that you can't just roll down by stopping using the extra features. Yeah. And there are amazing number of companies that don't get that and have this Open Core, but then as soon as you add anything else, you can't go back.
Well, and it comes back to your earlier question about migrations. We actually do see a lot of customers who are on the community version of Postgres who want to take advantage of some of the enhanced features. So an interesting, you know, you talked about migration. You know, we look at there's such a vast user base of Postgres that with some of these additional features, it's allowing those companies to kind of step up into higher order enterprise class uses, you know, in part because of the features and in part because they got a company behind it supporting, you know, doing all the traditional enterprise class product support that they need.
Are you familiar with, we had as a guest on a while back, Scalar.net, who basically does all automatic monitoring and failover of even Postgres instances. Sounds like you've got some of those similar features in your code.
Yeah, we do. We do, you know, variety of things. I am familiar with Scalar, although I haven't looked at them lately. But we do, you know, within both Cloud Database, but also through Postgres Enterprise Manager, we do, you know, a host of things that allow you to kind of, you know, manage the databases very efficiently. You know, we've erred in our cloud database product on the side of giving the option for a lot of user control of the database. And we start with set parameters, but we allow if you're a real database hacker to go in and actually change those parameters in the database. With the next, we'll soon be releasing the next version of our Postgres Enterprise Manager, which will have a web interface to it. Today it's a fat client, but we'll have a web interface. And on our short term roadmap, we'll be integrating all that capability into Cloud Database.
That sounds very, very cool. We've got to talk about some of the NoSQL databases that are coming around now. I mean, they've been around for a while now, but you've got CouchDB, you know, so many, Mongo, all these different things. Do you think they affect your enterprise database market in any way, or are they more just for smaller applications?
Yeah, they definitely affect in a couple of ways. First of all, you know, I think when you look at it, the question we get is, you know, are they replacing relational database workloads? And I don't think they are replacing relational workloads. I think to some extent, you know, there's clearly overlap. And so this is, you know, I think, you know, generally people kind of want to paint an absolute picture that's either a relational database or an OSQL database. We don't really see it that way. I mean, the application workload continuum is kind of vast and overlapped, and the applicability of an OSQL database, you know, is, you know, appropriate for certain workloads where in other cases relational is appropriate. So I don't think of that a question as an either or question. So we see it on a continuum. To that end, we believe, and we do with some of our customers, you know, one of our biggest customers in Mobi, who's doing, you know, probably the second biggest ad serving company who uses entirely a Postgres infrastructure, uses a variety of NoSQL technologies alongside our Postgres Plus Advanced Server and as you know, part of their total solution. I see it as a continuum and complementary technologies. I mean, obviously, you know, the relational database world makes improvements as we have to, you know, things like replication technologies. You see the introduction of new, you know, and improved sharding technologies, which we continue to work on, that begin to address, you know, kind of the maybe the bottom end of the NoSQL workload. So, you know, I think what we'll see is relational capabilities will continue to expand and consume some of the workloads that today can only be considered by NoSQL. And, you know, and similarly, we'll see some NoSQL technologies do you know, kind of make adjustments that address things that, that are, you know, kind of in the sweet spot of a relational database. Having said that, the places we do find it impact, and this probably relates more to me as I talk to analysts and media and press, maybe more often than most of the guys in the company, you know, there's certainly a tremendous amount of heat and light around NoSQL databases. So, you know, that impacts the messaging and the conversation with enterprise customers who are, you know, hot on that topic right now. And so, you know, I just want to continue to encourage, you know, our customers, as we've seen, you know, there's a lot of important new workloads that require new NoSQL technologies. The challenge that our enterprise customers are having is they don't know how to fund it. They didn't get more budget to fix those problems. So they're writing a long check to Oracle or, you know, pick their relational database vendor choice for, you know, workloads that don't require Oracle. And our message to them is, look, you know, you're going to have to pay for this future some way. Let's start fixing up your spend with Oracle or your traditional proprietary database, which, by the way, is probably the biggest IT budget software line item on your P&L. Let's start hacking at that cost so you can free up money to spend on these new workloads that business users really need help with. We may solve that a little bit with Postgres. We may not, but you need money for those new technologies to help the business.
Now, we have to talk a little bit about platforms as well. I mean, you're a former Red Hat guy, so I'm imagining, you know, you've got great Linux support for this kind of stuff. But what kind of platforms can I deploy Enterprise DB on? And do you prescribe any kind of, you know, desired platform that you want for that kind of thing? Or is it like a distribution I can install maybe or something like that?
No, we don't. We don't, you know, we're kind of unbiased in that way. I mean, we support, you know, Windows and 32-bit and 64-bit. We support, you know, all the variations of Linux, of course. We support Solaris. We support, you know, currently supporting HPU Xitanium. So, you know, we support Apple, you know, Apple platforms as well. So, you know, I think Postgres has done a lot to support platforms across the board. We've done some extra work. You know, you may have read in the press, we did a lot of work with HP on the Itanium platform, particularly as a result of Oracle dumping support for HPU Xitanium. So we don't bias it one way or another. We're happy to provide a cross-section of support. I mean, candidly, you know, developers today, you know, I would still say of the people who are developing on Postgres, we see roughly 70% of the people who download trial of Postgres are doing that on Windows boxes. That's the preferred choice of developers, it seems. And Apple's growing fast in that context. But and then in deployment, we see deployments in production generally flip over to about 70% on various Linux, you know, Linux distros.
So if I were to want to deploy something like Postgres Plus, one of your solutions, how easy is it for me to install it? You mentioned before you've worked a lot on improving the installation processes for things like Postgres. So is there a wizard or something? Is it nice and easy for me to install some packages?
Dan, it's become very easy. We refer to it as a one-click installer. You know, basically it's an installer package that takes you, it's a wizard that takes you through, you know, the basic install of the database. And then it presents through a technology we call Stack Builder, the ability to lay down with your database additional components. Some of them we bundle as part of our solution pack, so you can actually get it and install. And there's a variety of other packages in there that you can add onto your Postgres install. But, you know, in the past, before the one-click installers, you know, a good chunk of that was manual process. And I think, you know, that's an example of a simple enhancement to the technology that makes life so much easier for the, you know, for the introductory user, and even the sophisticated user. And I would estimate now, you know, between us and the Postgres community, we're doing, you know, 4 to 5 million downloads a year of various pieces of software. So it's a pretty, you know, I think that's enabled a lot more activity around the use of extensions and add-ons.
Mm. And is there any kind of trial version or trial license? So if I want to try Postgres Plus, but I'm not sure that I want to stick with it, is there any way I can do maybe a 30-day trial or something like that?
Yeah, we do have trial versions of the things that the particular extensions that we add for advanced servers, so you can download and try various versions of the technology. And then of course you can try the open source stuff to your heart's content without restriction, which we urge and encourage people to do. But we do try to make it as easy as possible for people to get the technology in their hands and try it. And get comfortable with it. And we do, by the way, we do the same thing with our cloud technology. You can go and set up a cluster, it's on us, try it. We time bound that a little bit so that we don't get hit with big Amazon bills. But we also encourage that. We want people using the technology.
It's very cool. Hey, so we're almost out of time. I just wanted to say that I wanted to know, like, your direction for the future as a business. Are you going to stay like heavily embedded in the community, do you ever foresee a chance when you're going to be like heading off 45 degrees away from the community, taking your own forked version of Postgres because something happened in the community that you just weren't willing to tolerate?
No, we're not. We're tied to this community. We think the technology is extraordinary. We love what the community does. Totally committed in our business strategy to work, as the enterprise Postgres company and build product based on what the community's done. I think that's a commitment that is so important to a company like ours to make, strategically, and that means for the long term. So we, because of that, we learn how to, adjust with the community, think with the community, and I think ultimately bring more value to users. I think that's the best of what open source does, and I think we're trying to embrace that alongside the community as a commercial supporter of the technology.
Well, this will be the most backward question I've ever asked, but how did EnterpriseDB get started, and how long ago was that, and what triggered it?
Yeah, the original business was started, I think, kind of the earliest versions of the company formed in 2004, but I think in earnest got started in 2005. The technical thesis that got the company started was really to say, hey, people are wound tight to Oracle, and if we could find a way to help you get off of Oracle without rewriting the apps, people would find that valuable. And that's what the company was founded on. That was what got the initial seed capital into the company. So it really started with Oracle compatibility. And the guys who founded said Postgres is a great starting point database. So the emphasis early was on Oracle compatibility. I came in and we changed the focus a little bit. Oracle compatibility is very important IP. But I really believed and I think extended that strategy to say we need to be a core database company. We need to have all the all the capabilities of a core database company, and that should be as a Postgres company. And we offer capabilities like Oracle compatibility as value added feature. So interesting history, but always centered on Postgres. And I think we've kind of enhanced our view of what that should mean.
Very good, very good. Well, like I said, we're almost out of time. Is there anything I haven't asked that you'd like to make sure our audience is aware of in terms of EnterpriseDB or even just the Postgres community in general?
No, we're easy to find on the web. I'd encourage people, if you haven't tried out Postgres, go to the community site, Postgres, www.postgresql.org, and look and learn about the community and learn about the technology. We certainly encourage you to give a try to Postgres. An easy way to do that is through Postgres Plus Cloud Database. You can get to that through our website very easily. And we just encourage you to get on the books and try some of the technology. I think you'll find it to be extraordinary.
And I have a couple of traditional questions I have to ask every guest. I don't know how technical you are, but we'll give it a try anyway. Your favorite scripting language, if any?
I don't have a favorite scripting language. I'm not a technology guy from that point of view. So I don't have I don't have a bias.
So your favorite text editor probably isn't a question that's usable.
Emacs or I don't know. I know guys who have a choice based on the development of carpal tunnel syndrome. That's about it.
I know what that means. Well, Ed, it's been really wonderful having you on the show and the details to which you've been able to describe your relationship with the community and the kinds of products you're offering. And I'm sure we have enlightened at least four or five more audience members into what this whole thing's about. And hopefully you'll get some business thrown your way. And hopefully a few more people will even try the open source community edition of Postgres, thanks to your clarity and ability to answer these questions clearly. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Randy. Thank you, Dan.
Very good. Very good. So it was Ed Boyajian. I hope I pronounced that again almost correct. Dan, what do you think?
Fascinating. I thought he was a really interesting guest. And I think we both agree we could have talked a lot longer. But unfortunately, you know, there are certain time constraints. But yeah, fascinating. And I think I was interested in the kind of the difference now that MySQL has been swallowed up by Oracle, how that kind of affects the business. And it seems like it's actually cleared the way for Postgres in some ways. And I think Postgres is a great technology. It just doesn't seem to quite have had the same PR push, and people, it wasn't as well known as MySQL for whatever reason. So hopefully we'll start to see it actually become better known now.
Well, you know, and with all respect to my friend Monty, I tell people now, friends don't let friends use MySQL. You know, if you're if you're stuck in the MySQL syntax and have to be backward compatible with that, the obvious choice these days is MariaDB, since I now consider MariaDB to be upstream of MySQL, because Monty and his team are generating the patches that sometimes Oracle accepts, sometimes Oracle doesn't, which surprises me. Why would they accept everything that Monty generated? Because hey, he's the dude, you know. But if you have a chance for a green start, you know, Postgres is really the first thing to reach for. And, you know, it's not hard to get started with just the open source thing, downloading it, and making it work. But particularly if you're coming from a place where you're replacing something like Oracle, or you want more handholding, it looks like Enterprise DB is one of the cool players in this field. And it sounds like they're really, I think, in terms of the thinnest impact on having an open source thing make money, I think this is probably about as close as we get. I mean, I was sort of surprised at the Open Bravo people. You've heard a bunch of really good players in the open, in enterprise space lately that are really doing the right thing, even though they're releasing open core things. Because it's probably because I haven't had Simon on the show to yell at him, so I don't know whether we're going to get in trouble here at some point. Any other thoughts, Dan?
Yeah, I think the business model is very interesting. And as I mentioned, that was one of the first questions I was sent via Twitter when I said I was going to do this show. Is it open core and et cetera, et cetera? But I thought he answered that really well. And I don't know, we'll have to check with Simon to see how he feels about it. But I thought that generally that they seem to be doing the right thing, and that's hopefully good for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Simon's our resident wizard of how to make sure open core gets skewered. So, and rightfully so. I mean, if you have a position where you're saying that everything should be open source, everything should be free software, like your card-carrying member of the FSF, for example, then you know, then these are important questions, especially if you have a philosophical stand about something like you know, Postgres itself being free and free in the freedom sense. But people, you know, layering stuff on top of it and shipping it as proprietary bits. So it's good to get that clarity about why that's happening that way. And this is how they're making their money. This is how they're paying. And this is a great thing about this, too, is that by selling the bits and keeping them dark, they're paying people who are working on the open core, who are actually spending all of their day making the core product also better. So they're giving back to the community through direct cash, I mean, direct money in terms of salaries. And I think this is what most people miss when they want everything to be open, is that you got to have some value somewhere in there. Of course, you know, there are ways to do it without that as well. But I think the most successful models that we've seen over the years are people who have some sort of open core thing going on. So speaking of that, let's talk about upcoming guests. that's not a really awkward transition. It's not too bad, actually. Next week, we have the Twisted Python Framework, which is a framework that allows multiple events to be processed inside a single Python program. It looks like a lot of fun. Web servers have been built on that, email servers, all sorts of things. We'll have them on and talk about that. Just added to the list. This is going to be interesting. OpenROV, underwater robots. You see how much fun we're having driving that rover around on Mars? What if you could drive your underwater robot around using open source software? These guys are going to come in. I understand they're actually going to come in to the brick house and demonstrate their stuff. I guess they're bringing an aquarium or something so you can see the thing flying around. And we've got, of course, we've got our resident nearby co-host for that show, too. And I'm blanking on his name. Aaron. Aaron Newcomb's going to come.
Aaron Newcomb.
Yes, I was going, how do I forget Aaron's name? Sorry, Aaron. Sorry. It's been a long morning already. Jaspersoft's coming in after that, talking about business intelligence. KVM, the actual technology that lets us run almost everything cloud-like these days. HPCC Systems, which is high-performance computing systems to allow us to talk about things with teraflops in them and so on, or actually whatever the next thing after tera is, petaflops? Yeah, huge amounts of bits going on. And the AirYar chatbot, which sits on a Jabberlink and allows you to have queries and answers and maybe even pretend to be almost human that way. We have lots of email flying to fill in the rest of Q4, so you'll be getting more announcements coming up soon. You can watch that list at twit.tv/floss. There's a link near the top of that page that links to my Google spreadsheet, which actually I keep up to date daily almost to make sure that things are you can always see who's coming up now and who's coming up on the short list. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus and also the Floss Weekly, all one word, Twitter and Identica handle to see show announcements and also upcoming guest booking. As we went to frequently in this particular episode, there's a live chat room. If you go to live.twit.tv at 8:30 Pacific time, 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays, you will, in fact, find the chat room, find a live video link, find live audio links. And I've just found out this morning there's actually a whole wiki page on wiki.twit.tv called How to Watch and Listen to Twit. So if you don't particularly care for the web interface there, you can get it via VLC, you can get it via iPhone and Android apps, all sorts of really great ways to get live feeds while we're doing the show. And you'll see all the behind the scenes of where we really screw up and we had to edit it all out. No, not so many of those. It's all pretty good. You can follow me at Merlin on Twitter and Identica and Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus. I'm posting 5 to 10 interesting things a day there and getting more and more followers. I'm getting up to 17,000 followers on Google Plus now. It's pretty cool. If you follow that, you'll find out that tomorrow, the day after I'm taping this show, I'm flying off to Atlanta, hot Atlanta this time of year, for DragonCon, the big 40,000 attendee conference. I am on a number of panels there on the EFF track, including the traditional Hacker 101 and 201. Watch my tweets. I'll probably be out in public spaces most of the time, and so you can actually like wander around, and maybe I'll be sitting at one of the bars at one of the hotels if you're in the Atlanta area, so you can chat with me there. I'm also on a panel with Bruce Schneier, Mr. Security himself. I don't know how I swing that, but I am sitting on a panel with Bruce, and it's just the two of us, so I have no idea whether I'm supposed to be preparing materials or whether he is. We haven't chatted yet, and the thing is the day after tomorrow, so we'll see. I'm in New Orleans on a planning retreat, according to the IRS, from September 28th to October 5th, so if you're in that area, watch for my announcements of where I'm at. And that's all I want to plug today. Dan, what do you want to plug?
Well, very quickly, I want to mention the fact that we just held OggCamp, which is the largest open source and free software event in the UK. We had 400 people come along. We did lots of cool open hardware stuff. But a very special thing that came out of it was we had an interview with Stephen Fry, who joined us via video, let's say, because he couldn't come in person. But it's actually on YouTube right now. So if you go to OggCamp, if you go to youtube.com/OggCampTV, you'll see the video on there, which is Stephen Fry spending 15, 16 minutes talking about Linux, open source, programming, his experiences of learning to program, all that kind of stuff. So go and check that out. It's had 7,500 views in the first kind of 48 hours, so it's not doing too bad. But if you want to go and check that out, it's very interesting. You can find all the materials at oggcamp.org, which is oggcamp.org. Linux Outlaws is back now, so if you want to find us, go to sixgun.org/Linux Outlaws, or just Google for Linux Outlaws, and you'll find us there. And if you want to find out anything I'm doing, music or writing or any other silliness, go to danlynch.org, and you can find links to Twitter and my Google Plus and all those kind of places there.
Very good, Dan. Very good, Dan. And again, once again, thank you for co-hosting the show with me. It's always a pleasure when you're hanging out here with me and filling in the questions when I'm busy trying to recover my throat for a second.
No problem. It's always a pleasure, and I'll see you again soon.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I hear the music coming up behind me, so you know what that means. We'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.